Good afternoon and welcome to the premiere edition of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and I'm so excited that you're joining us here this afternoon. If you're tuning in to listen to the vitamin infomercial that normally airs on this time slot, I hate to break it to you, but we're going to permanently preempt that program for this super exciting, very radical show. Here at our soapbox, we feel like the so-called left has moved to the right and left us out. We will use this soapbox that we are purchasing from Green 960 to move this country closer to what we believe are the humane positions of the true left, ending the U.S. empire and putting the brakes on the military-industrial complex and convincing our brothers and sisters that everyone in this world is entitled to basic human rights of health care, education, housing, healthy food and clean water, and a world where the environment is clean and energy is renewable and sustainable. Today we have a very timely and fascinating show. We will later be talking to legendary music icon Graham Nash, and after the short break we'll be talking to economist Richard Cook about his cure for our economic woes and what he has, in his own words, modestly entitled The Cook Plan. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox on Green 960.
The Cindy Sheehan Soapbox has a simple philosophy. We don't want our show owned, sponsored, or beholden to any corporate bastards. Don't get us wrong. Not all large companies and businesses are evil imperialists. But let's get real. Conscious companies are hard to come by. Sobered by the challenges facing independent media and inspired by the massive support for our No Corporate Bastards policy, we are launching our 1,000 Soapbox Sponsors campaign to sign up 1,000 monthly supporters by the end of January. We are asking you, the listeners, activists and grassroots organizers that make up our base, to donate $5, $10, or $20 a month to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox not only on the air, but also innovative and powerful. Donating $5 a month, the price of a trip to a coffee shop in most cities, will provide not only the peace of mind that Cindy's Soapbox will stick around for years to come, but will also make you a subscriber for as long as your monthly donation continues. Furthermore, we will print the list of monthly sustainers on our website, unless you don't want to be identified, as a thank you to all of our supporters. Go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com to sign up now with our automatic monthly donation option. We are committed to producing a high-quality radio show and website that works as a tool to keep you informed and promote social and economic justice. Become a monthly Soapbox sponsor and help make it happen. We are neither owned nor funded by big conglomerates or advertisers. That's why we need your support to sustain our efforts. Please donate now at cindysheehansoapbox.com and consider becoming a monthly sponsor to help us secure our financing into the future. Power to the people.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox on Green 960. The first guest on my first show, like I said before the break, is economist Richard Cook. Richard is a former U.S. federal government analyst. His book on monetary reform, We Hold These Truths, The Hope of Monetary Reform, is now available. His website is www.richardccook.com. He is also the author of Challenger Revealed, How the Reagan Administration Caused the Greatest Tragedy of the Space Age. And that sounds like a great topic for a future interview. I first became aware of Richard about 6 weeks ago when I read an article he wrote about his plan. I was instantly intrigued, and we began an email conversation. Welcome, Richard Cook, and Happy New Year, and thanks for being on my first show.
Thank you, Cindy. Happy New Year to you, and I'm really glad to be here.
Well, again, thank you. As you and all my listeners know, the state of the economy is frightening right now. There has been trillions of dollars in bankster bailouts already, and some of the money is also being used to bail out the auto industry. President-elect Obama is proposing jobs programs and other economic stimuli that will certainly plunge our country deeper into debt. Please tell us about why you propose a basic income guarantee and tell my listeners what a BIG is.
Well, first of all, the thing that we really need to understand is that we have an economy that is based on debt.
Right.
The debt-based economy is the way that money is introduced into circulation. Almost every dollar that enters the economy gets there as the result of a debt owed to a financial institution. And so the debt is growing exponentially. The debt load currently for the economy is well over $50 trillion.
I was like, shocked when I read that statistic in one of your articles.
And it continues to grow. And, of course, with these bailouts that have come after the collapse of the financial system, the debt is piling up even more because it's all being financed out of future federal government deficits,
right,
which is more debt that we, the people, owe and have to pay interest on. So they're just piling debt upon debt. They're rolling over debt. But what is lacking here is the understanding that the reason that the financial system has collapsed is because of the lack of consumer purchasing power in our economy.
Well, it's almost like it's a federal Ponzi scheme like the Madoff scandal, where one of these days all that debt is going to become due, and then what do we do when that day happens? And that day of reckoning is happening, and, you know, apparently that's why our economy is collapsing.
It's happening right now. In fact, if you look at the federal budget, of course, we know we have an extraordinary expenditure on the war machine.
Right.
But in addition to that, $500 billion of the federal budget for the current fiscal year is simply interest on the national debt. It's not even repaying the debt itself. It's just paying the banks for essentially borrowing our own money, and that's what the federal debt really is. It's using what I call a public utility, which is the credit of the nation, and funneling that public utility through the banking system and then paying interest on it. This is the result of the Federal Reserve System that was set up almost a century ago and that has been the basis for public finance in this country ever since then. And what people don't realize is that the extraordinary amount of money that is paid out, is being paid out to the banking system through these bailouts, and of course the bailouts are now expanding to cover other things, as you mentioned, the auto industry and other areas. This is credit that really belongs to the people, to we the people. It's a natural power that resides within a producing economy to produce goods and services. It's a way to monetize the productive capability of the nation. And that power is being taken away from the producing economy and simply handed over to the financial industry to cover their bad debts. And these bad debts result, by and large, as you see with the collapse of the housing market, from the fact that consumers or citizens do not have enough money to pay these extraordinary levels of debt. So what it demonstrates is that that money can be introduced into circulation very easily, very quickly, and very rapidly. And the point I'm trying to make is there's no reason why that should go to the banking industry to pay for their bad debts and for their mismanagement. That money can be distributed directly to the people.
Which is the basic income guarantee that you speak about. Your solution would be, part of the solution would be to forgive debts immediately and then to not exactly redistribute that money, but to give a basic income guarantee to each and every American.
That's right. The basic income guarantee that I'm talking about, and it's not just me. There's a whole basic income guarantee movement in this country that's been around for a long time.
Right.
But the basic concept is to distribute purchasing power to the citizens, and what we're calling for is a distribution at the rate of $1,000 a month per capita to go to every individual citizen as a basic income guarantee. And in a way, it's similar to the amount that's currently being paid through the Alaska Permanent Fund. Alaska is the one state of the union that has a basic income guarantee. It's a little bit over $3,000 this year. And there's really no reason why that can't be done for the entire nation. And, of course, it could be done for any nation in the world if people wanted to adopt what we call dividend economics. Introducing that dividend into circulation at a subsistence level would not only eliminate and put a floor under the poverty that is increasingly growing in this country and really becoming very much out of control as people lose their jobs and as people have their homes foreclosed. We need to build a floor under the economy, which comes not through the creation of jobs, which can take years for some of these stimulus programs to play out,
and also
pile
on more debt to
Correct.
An already out of control system we have here in the country. You have talked about a bailout for the people in your articles, and that's what my campaign here in San Francisco called for. And it makes more sense to put, like you said, money into our hands that would make a direct stimulus of the economy right away. But you also say that not even so-called progressive economists are calling for a basic income guarantee. Why do you think that is?
Well, they always seem to tie economic stimulus with jobs programs, job creation programs. And this is something that has been one of the basic concepts of progressive economics ever since the New Deal, because it was the New Deal that began to create jobs using public borrowing. But they never really had a full employment economy until World War II. So today, the military-industrial complex and the extraordinary amount of money that goes into that is really a job creation program in the economic aspect that comes from Keynesian economics, which is focused on priming the economic pump by government borrowing and high taxation. So they have the concept that you need to introduce purchasing power into the economy, but it's been perverted.
And
it's been diverted into the war machine. You don't have to do it that way.
Right.
You can do it by a direct basic income guarantee, and that's what the monetary reform movement is calling for. We're trying to educate the progressives on that.
Well, Richard, we have to take a short break right now, and can you stay with us for a few more minutes? Okay.
Certainly can.
All right. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dee Dee, and this is my soapbox. Hope. Obama bumper stickers and window signs are still being proudly displayed. When most are asked why they support the president-elect, the answer is inevitably, he gives me hope. I would hope that the president-elect would have made better choices for his cabinet. We were told to vote for change, and his appointments are all business-as-usual warmongers and capitalists who not only have the potential to continue the current agenda, but many were actually in positions that created our current crises. Still, there is hope. I would hope that after the president-elect's inauguration, coronation, sanctification, that instead of attending the corporately sponsored multi-million dollar inaugural ball, he would roll up his sleeves and call for an end to the war on terror. Every minute we wait, another life is lost. The reality? He will redeploy combat troops from Iraq to Afghanistan to fight the real war on terror, leaving all the bases the U.S. built staffed and operating, while Blackwater mercenaries are left to terrorize the Iraqi people in the streets. My hope is fading. I would hope that the president-elect will truly run the country with our best interests first and foremost, instead of the special interests that have influenced our leaders for decades. With banksters, war profiteers, and AIPAC topping the list of the president-elect's campaign contributors, my hope dwindles. I would hope that the president-elect would make sure that every U.S. citizen has health care, housing, food, education, and jobs paying living wages. Considering the fact that while still on the campaign trail, the candidate strong-armed his Senate cronies to pass the bankster bailout, that hope also flew out the window. I would hope that the president-elect would bring the U.S. back to where we all thought we were, the good big sisters of the planet. I have been to several countries in the past 4 years. In all, the U.S. is known as the Empire. We are now looked upon as evil bullies. Seeing the current escalation of violence between Israel and Palestine, and the president-elect's unwavering support for Israel instead of neutral statesmanship and acknowledging that both states have the right to exist, well, isn't that the right thing to do? My hope does not float here either. I would hope that the peace anti-war movement remembers the lessons of the 06 elections. We put all of our hope eggs in that basket. Now we are walking on the shattered eggshells of that hope. Eggshells drenched in 2 more years of blood. Eggshells that once held our nest eggs. Hope is a cop-out. Hope is a way of saying, I don't want to be responsible anymore. Hopers and pragmatists, I have learned, are actually the same people, both using one word to justify their apathy, inaction, or complicity. I hope I am wrong.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. You're listening to a very fascinating interview I'm having with Richard Cook about how we can not only stimulate the economy, but have a long-term cure for the economy. You stated in a recent article that the financial system has destroyed America. That's a pretty strong accusation there, Richard. How do you feel like the financial system has destroyed our country?
Coming out of the New Deal and out of World War II and the economy that we built during the 1950s, we had the strongest producing economy in the world. We were the world's greatest industrial economy. But starting in the 1970s, when the financial system began to be deregulated and the Federal Reserve, under the monetarist philosophy, became the controller of the economy, every period of economic growth that we've had since then has been simply a financial bubble. It's been a run-up in the costs of assets. You see that in the periodic cycles in the stock market. But then these bubbles burst. We had the merger acquisition bubble of the 80s. We had the dot-com bubble of the 90s.
Right.
And then during the Bush administration, during the last 8 years, we've had this incredible sequence of bubbles involving not just housing, but also commercial real estate, the equity markets, the derivative markets, which are in the hundreds of trillions of dollars worldwide, and in the commodities markets. And all of these asset bubbles have created a tremendous amount of inflation and a tremendous amount of debt, and then this debt has been collapsing. And it's the collapse of these bubbles that is taking down the producing economy. Our job base has been outsourced to China, to other countries. Our consumer economy has been built upon borrowing. And now that the banks can't lend anymore because people can't repay their debts, the whole house of cards has come crashing down. We need to rebuild the economy from the bottom up, and the basic income guarantee is a way to start doing this because you're putting purchasing power directly into the hands of the consumers. And then if you take the second part of what I call the Cook Plan, which is to invest this money in a new series of community savings banks that is then funneled into consumer investment through small business, through family farming, through student lending, and those sorts of grassroots lending, then we can rebuild the economy where we should be starting, which is with the individual citizen, the individual consumer.
Well, it's been pretty well demonstrated that the trillions of dollars of bailouts to the banksters has not solved the economy, has not helped the average American at all, and making monetary policy more localized really seems to me like it would be more of a common sense solution. Another one of the reasons that I first contacted you is that you were urging consumers, and I think it's very interesting that we call ourselves consumers now and not citizens.
Right.
And that, I think, is your whole philosophy that you talk about of the financial system and debt. Anyway, you urge consumers to stop paying their credit card bills. Can you explain to my listeners the strategy?
Well, credit card lending is really done through the fractional reserve method, whereby the banks simply create this money out of thin air. When you borrow on a credit card or run up charges on a credit card, that money is not taken from somebody and then given to the merchant that you're buying from. It's created simply as a bank payment to you from the what I call the public utility of credit that is kind of inherent within the producing economy. So they have gained control of it. It's the privatization of credit that leads to these tremendous buildup of consumer debt. And then, because this is a substitute for the income that people should be earning through their jobs or through a basic income guarantee, they don't have enough money to pay back this credit card debt. Fortunately, in this country, it's not a crime yet to not pay a debt. And so if people are unable to pay a credit card or a payment, they should understand that the merchant they bought from originally has already been paid through the credit the bank has created.
Right.
It's up to them to decide whether they have the ability to continue to pay the credit card debt, particularly when the interest rates on credit cards have become so exorbitant. And you add to that the charges, the late fees that are often added on
over
to people's
limit
accounts
fees.
Without their prior knowledge. It's just a travesty.
The late fees cause over limit fees, and then you get involved in a cycle that never ends.
It's the worst kind of credit abuse.
Well, then if we have the extra cash, we can buy food, we can buy gas, we can shop at local merchants, we can feed our families and support ourselves. I really urge people to go to your website. Can you tell people your website again?
Yes, it's www.richardccook.com. Now, for the economics articles, the best place is to go to the Global Research website that has them archived, and that's www.globalresearch.ca. And if people want to write to me directly about anything that I've been covering, it's economicsanity@gmail.com.
Okay, for a quick final question, do you think that the Federal Reserve should be shut down?
I think the Federal Reserve should essentially be nationalized, but the Federal Reserve should no longer be what we call a bank of issue. That is, money should no longer be introduced into the economy through debt, through the Federal Reserve system, and through bank lending. It should be directly created by the federal government, either by the citizens' dividend, the basic income guarantee that we're talking about, or by direct government lending for infrastructure improvement, or even direct government expenditures, as was done by the greenback system back in the 19th century. These are all methods of direct government financing that have been researched and are part of the modern monetary reform movement. But the bank, the idea of the Federal Reserve as a bank of issue is a very outdated concept that was developed to put the entire economy under a usury-based, debt-based monetary system. That's what we have to end.
Okay, Richard. Thank you so much for being on my first show. I appreciate it. I hope that this stimulates people to go to your website, read your articles, learn more about the basic income guarantee, and to really realize that we, the people, have the power in our hands. Nothing good rarely comes from the top down. It's always from the bottom up. And I appreciate your time with us today. I hope that we can have you on again in a future show. I'm sure that the economy is not going to improve over the short term or maybe even the long term. So please be with us again.
Well, thank you, Cindy. I really appreciate it. It was good talking to you today.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Okay, stay tuned while we take this short break. When we come back, I will be talking to my friend Graham Nash. This is Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening to The Soapbox on Green 960.
Some anniversaries aren't cause for celebration. January 11th, 2009 marks the seventh year of gross human rights violations perpetrated by the U.S. government and military against foreign detainees being held illegally on U.S. soil. The United States detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have become emblematic of the gross human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of fighting terrorism. At Guantanamo, the U.S. government sought to hold detainees in a place where neither U.S. nor international law applied, but no one can be held outside of the law. Detainees held at Guantanamo, Bagram, and elsewhere must either be charged with crimes and given fair trials or be released. Witness Against Torture announces a new chapter in the campaign to close the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, end torture and indefinite detention, and stop extraordinary rendition by the U.S. government. The 100 Days campaign brings together a coalition of groups and individuals who will take part in demonstrations, educate Congress and the public, and engage in nonviolent direct action. Join us in defending basic human rights. Hundreds of detainees are still being illegally held, many of whom have been cleared of all charges. Sign our online petition urging President-elect Barack Obama to take immediate action to close Guantanamo and end illegal U.S. detentions at www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com. Today we are standing up for their rights. Tomorrow it might be yours. For more information about the ongoing campaign to shut Guantanamo, visit 100dayscampaign.org and find out how you can make a difference.
So your brother's bound and gagged, and they've chained him to a chair. Won't you please come to Chicago just to sing?
Hi, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960. My next guest is musician and icon Graham Nash. Graham has not only been a successful musician and photographer, but the music he made with David Crosby, Stephen Stills, and sometimes Neil Young really defined a generation. I so admire artists who use their talents to affect social change, and Graham's music and generous support of progressive causes are a model to be greatly admired and copied. Graham, sweetie, thank you for agreeing to be on my first show.
You're very welcome, and Happy New Year to you. Let's hope that that things get better in 2009. Although I think it's going to be rough for this first year. I mean, we've handed Barack Obama, you know, a bucket of horse doo-doo and hoping he makes biscuits from it, you know. And I truly believe that if he keeps his connection with the American people and he makes it plain that it's us, not him, I think he'll do fine.
Well, it's also, the American people really have to keep our connection to Barack Obama and to our elected officials. I think for so long we gave up the idea that we were the ones in charge, that the American people are the sovereigns in this country, and we literally let our leaders get away with murder for generations. So we, the people, can't take this time to relax. Like you said, we're in some deep doo-doo. And
yeah,
we're Barack Obama, no matter how strong he is and no matter if he is the Messiah that we've all been waiting for, he can't pull 300 million people up or 6 billion people up by himself. We really have to be the ones that are pulling ourselves out of this problem that we have helped our leaders get into.
Yeah, we definitely have taken our hands off the rein of who really are the beneficiaries of this wonderful country called America. It's really the American people. And I think the absurdity of the last 8 years of the Bush administration has been driven home to people. And perhaps now that elections will be better, you know, we lost, you know, 2000 and we lost 2004, you know, and there was, without question, I think, you know, if you ask anybody with a brain, that both those elections were probably stolen. And even though Barack won by 4 million votes, we still have to investigate and straighten out our voting system. Because even though he did win, and we could always say, well, democracy works, our guy won.
Right.
But he could have won by 7 million votes. You know, there were 4 million people, roughly, that had their vote taken away from them for various reasons. Either they were, you know, had their home foreclosed on and therefore didn't have a real address, or, you know, it's been amazing. So what we must not do is take our eye off the ball just because Barack was elected.
Well, absolutely. We can't put our faith in our electoral system or in our politicians. I mean, it's obvious what the direction that Barack Obama has already taken with his appointments and, you know, with his aggressive posturing. We still have to be the people. We're the ones that we really have been waiting for. You brought up electoral reform, and a couple of years ago, you and your family invited me to a concert that you were doing with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young at the Hollywood Bowl. And the most amazing and energetic part of that concert was when you all sang Neil Young's Let's Impeach the President. And everybody like got up and they were screaming and, you know.
Well,
there,
this was Hollywood, Cindy.
Yeah, well, there were a few people that didn't look too happy about
the energy. Well, they
weren't screaming
so much energy in Atlanta for us.
Well, exactly.
In Atlanta, they were screaming against us.
Well, but, you know, you were involved in the Vietnam anti-war movement, the protests. Your songs like Chicago that we listened to really energized the movement back then. And I think have lost some of that energy in this movement.
I'm not so sure that that's true, Cindy, and I'll tell you why. A lot of people say, come up to me after shows and say, you know, where are the protest songs? Where's the energy? What happened? And I tell them that the media of the world is probably owned by people, you know, maybe a dozen people, maybe. It's probably less than that. The world's media is controlled by, you know, almost a dozen people.
A handful of people.
Yeah, they don't want protest songs on their radio. They don't want people to be fired up. They want us to be sheep so that we can be controlled and stolen from.
If
you go onto Living with War website of Neil Young's, there's a list there of 2,500 protest songs. You won't hear them on the radio, though, because they don't want us to hear them.
Well, I think that's my point. I think that there is protest music out there, and it's some of it is very good, but we march along in our protest lines, whatever we're protesting, and we sing, "We Shall Overcome." Why aren't we confronting the powers that be and, like, screaming Rage Against the Machines, like, "F you, I don't have to do what you tell me," instead of, like, going, "Oh, we shall overcome." You know, it just seems that whatever powers that be that are stopping us from being energized, how can we overcome that?
Well, I think that Barack Obama is doing a great deal to overcome that. The amount of young people that he brought into the voting process was astounding. When I was out there, Crosby and I planned our last tour in swing states. And during our days off, we would go to Barack headquarters and talk to the volunteers and tell them what a great job they were doing. We did concerts. We did one with the Beastie Boys. We tried our best to get this man elected. And I believe that him and his message of hope and his youthful energy are enticing younger people to take politics much more seriously than they had in the past. Much more seriously.
Well, we have to also, like we were talking about before, not just give up and think that, you know, once we've pulled the lever for a certain candidate, that that's all that we have to be involved in our democracy, our representative republic, means that we have to also be involved in it. I want to shift gears a little bit because you have really been known for your work against nuclear power and nuclear energy and nuclear bombs, the anti-nuke movement. Where do you think that movement is now? Where do you think the successes have been? And where do you think we have to go with it?
About 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, maybe even a year ago, Jackson and Brown and Bonnie and I.
Oh, Jackson Brown. Jackson Brown's my pretend boyfriend. He lets me be, though. That's
what
okay.
Happened to me, Cindy? Am I too old for
well,
you now?
You know, whenever we're together, Susan, your wife is always there. So,
well, let's get serious here. What were we talking about?
About the anti-nuke movement that Jackson and Bonnie Raitt have also
Jackson
been involved in.
Jackson and Bonnie and I, about a year ago, heard that there was a clause being inserted into a bill that was going to be discussed in almost private and at midnight, one of those things. That here's what's going on. Nuclear power cannot support itself financially. There is not one Wall Street firm, and especially today, that will ever put a dollar into nuclear power. So they'll never invest in it because of the, you know, the many, many problems, starting with, you know, miners dying from uranium poisoning, to transportation, to the terrorist activity that could happen, to the storage of nuclear waste. And there was a clause being inserted into a bill that forced the public to pay about $50 billion to restart the nuclear industry, an industry that is dying. We're using nuclear power that is poisonous for thousands of years and incredibly dangerous and presents terrorist targets to boil water.
Yes.
That's all we're doing with nuclear power. We're boiling water to run steam turbines. We've got to get smarter than this.
Where do you think the movement should go? You know, admittedly, Barack Obama is pro-nuke and pro-clean coal.
Now, wait a second. I don't think he's pro-nuke.
Pro-nuclear power.
He has not taken nuclear power off the table,
right.
But he's being brilliant, I think, because he's saying, yes, let's consider it, but we can't use nuclear power until we get certain problems sorted out right now. One of them, of course, is the storage of the nuclear waste. So he's being smart. He's not taking it off the table, but he's saying we could use it if it was safe.
Do you think that the $50 billion that they we're going to use to jumpstart the nuclear power industry could be better spent on renewable and sustainable forms of energy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about it. You know, 30 years ago when Jackson and Bonnie and James Taylor and John Hall and I were doing, you know, the No Nukes concerts,
right.
we knew that it was a failing business. And we knew that it's only for profit, and it's and they keep quoting the French system. The French have got 80 nuclear power plants, and they've never had a problem. It's all lies.
Well, also part of the problem with the nuclear power issue is also the nuclear weapon issue, where not only do we have tens of thousands of armed nuclear bombs right now, but we're using depleted uranium in munitions and in steering columns and Humvees, and the Middle East right now is contaminated for, like you said, thousands of years with this depleted uranium
that they're using in the weapon systems. Yes,
it causes so many kinds of illnesses.
It's total madness. It is total madness. But let's take a deep breath. Let's realize that we have somebody in the White House that can put a complete sentence together. Let us support him. Let us listen. Let us advise. Let us work. Let us get through this.
Can we talk about now our current infestation in the Oval Office, the White House right now, George Bush? Back in the day when Nixon was leaving office, because of his crimes, and he wasn't accused in the impeachment articles that were going to be introduced against him. He wasn't accused of the illegal bombings of Laos and Cambodia, but he was accused of other things, and he would have been impeached, I believe, if he wasn't, if he didn't resign.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me?
I do.
Yeah, so then he resigned. His appointed vice president, Gerald Ford, became the president, and he pardoned Richard Nixon. So Richard Nixon was able to slink off into, you know, whatever he did for the rest of his life without being held accountable. LBJ wasn't held accountable for the escalation in Vietnam. The McNamara.
I don't think the hierarchy will ever be held accountable.
Well,
who's out of the Bush administration? Who's going to be accountable for not only, approximately just short of 5,000 American deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan combined, but what about the hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians? Who's going to take account for that? Who's going to pay for that?
Well,
somebody
exactly.
did that. And when you know that they lied us into this war, they manipulated the intelligence to make it appear that this man was about to drop a bomb on Washington and went in there and preemptively invaded a foreign country under false pretenses, and therefore hundreds of thousands of people are dead. The opinion the rest of the world held of America during the Bush administration was atrocious. Who's going to be accountable for this? Who's going to make people accountable for all this madness? And people say, well, you know, George Bush kept us really safe. You know, we haven't been attacked, you know, since 9/11. I say bullshit. I say $10 billion a month out of our economy, out of the hands of renewable energies and education for our children
and healthcare, et cetera.
Right. We're being attacked monetarily. Just because nobody set off a hand grenade in Central Station doesn't mean we're not being attacked.
True.
So when they say George Bush is keeping us safe, I say, no, he's not.
Well, he definitely hasn't kept us safe, and we, that's the American exceptionalism. We haven't been attacked since 9/11, so the world must be fine. But there's
right.
people being attacked right now in Gaza. There's the people of Iraq, the people of Afghanistan that are also human beings that deserve the same things that we want here in America. But my
right.
point was that when Gerald Ford died, people were saying, oh, he healed the nation because he pardoned Nixon. But I think if Nixon had to be held accountable for war crimes, crimes against humanity, perhaps we wouldn't be where we are today. And I think that the movement needs to make accountability still a focus. We need to finally hold American leaders accountable for the same things that we've been holding other leaders accountable for all these years.
Absolutely.
Well, so
absolutely.
We still need
I totally
to,
agree with you, Cindy.
We still need to impeach the president for lying and for doing everything else that he's done this these past 8 years. And then we might get leaders that we can fully trust and who will actually represent the people of America. So, Graham, I'm going to have to go now. It was awesome talking to you. And again, thank you for supporting my campaign. For Congress, I ran here against Nancy Pelosi,
yes,
as everybody
did.
Knows, in 2008. We didn't win, but we did very well. We thank you for your support. We thank you for support of our radio show, and I hope that we can stay in contact and we can work together to really...
Come back and see me in paradise.
I hope so. I can't wait. So thank you so much, Graham. Love to the family, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. I'll say hello to Susan for you.
We can change.
Okay, so you're listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960. We'll be right back with a regular feature on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, My Soapbox Rant, and we'll answer an email from one of our supporters. So stay tuned here for Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Green 960.
The Cindy Sheehan Soapbox has a simple philosophy. We don't want our show owned, sponsored, or beholden to any corporate bastards. Don't get us wrong. Not all large companies and businesses are evil imperialists, but let's get real. Conscious companies are hard to come by. Sobered by the challenges facing independent media and inspired by the massive support for our No Corporate Bastards policy, we are launching our 1,000 Soapbox Sponsors campaign to sign up 1,000 monthly supporters by the end of January. We are asking you, the listeners, activists and grassroots organizers that make up our base, to donate $5, $10, or $20 a month to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox not only on the air, but also innovative and powerful. Donating $5 a month, the price of a trip to a coffee shop in most cities, will provide not only the peace of mind that Cindy's Soapbox will stick around for years to come, but will also make you a subscriber for as long as your monthly donation continues. Furthermore, we will print the list of monthly sustainers on our website, unless you don't want to be identified, as a thank you to all of our supporters. Go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com to sign up now with our automatic monthly donation option. We are committed to producing a high-quality radio show and website that works as a tool to keep you informed and promote social and economic justice. Become a monthly Soapbox sponsor and help make it happen. We are neither owned nor funded by big conglomerates or advertisers. That's why we need your support to sustain our efforts. Please donate now at cindysheehansoapbox.com and consider becoming a monthly sponsor to help us secure our financing into the future. Power to the people.
Pull the rope.
Hey, watch your foot.
Like rock climbers, small business owners negotiate a maze of risks and obstacles. Ask Mike Pareo and Tom Merritt. They know. Their company makes outdoor clothing.
Survival rests on a tiny edge.
That's right.
That's where the Small Business Administration helps, with financing, counseling, and technical assistance.
Making it to the top is tough,
but the view is incredible.
Discover the SBA. Call 1-800-USK-SBA. That's 1-800-USK-SBA. Brought to you by the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Hi, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you are listening to Green 960. It seems like on a daily basis, we are confronted with more crimes and more overt oppression from the robber class. I can't count how many times we say to ourselves every day, are you effing kidding me? Dick Cheney has admitted to planning the U.S.'s policy on torture, and not one of our amazingly corrupt Congress is saying, are you effing kidding me? Well, we will say it on the soapbox every week. Trust me. This past week, we have been assaulted by the Israeli overkill response to a few rockets that were launched from occupied Gaza into Israel, and not one Israeli was killed before the aerial bombardment began on December 27th. Now over 300 Gazans have been massacred, with over 1,500 seriously wounded by the time we tape this show. I fear that with Israeli troops amassing on the border of Gaza, it will be far worse by the time the show airs. I abhor and deplore violence of any kind, but an occupied people, and Palestine has been occupied by Israel since 1947, have a right to resist. I hate that fact because my son Casey was killed by an Iraqi who was resisting the USA's occupation of Iraq. But it is understandable that communities don't want foreign occupiers on their soil. When Israel, this is a quote from Nancy Pelosi. When Israel is attacked, the United States must continue to stand strongly with its friend and democratic ally. According to Pelosi, peace between Israelis and Palestinians cannot result from daily barrages of rocket and mortar fire from Hamas-controlled Gaza. Hamas and its supporters must understand that Gaza cannot and will not be allowed to be a sanctuary for attacks on Israel. Nancy Pelosi actually said this. Well, this is my response to her. Nancy, peace cannot be achieved in the Middle East while Israel is attacking Gaza with U.S.-made F-18s and Apache helicopters and oppressing Palestinians and stealing their lands and crowding them onto smaller and smaller portions of their land while depriving them of basic needs. Nancy, are you effing kidding me? The medical system in Gaza has already been decimated by the immorally imposed blockade, and now it has been taxed to the breaking point by the violence where many civilians have been killed and wounded. Nancy, in case you don't know, not taking care of your occupied peoples violates the Fourth Geneva Convention and is a war crime, as is targeting civilians. The USA must cease arming Israel and supporting their occupation of Palestine. The response to a few homemade missiles launched from Gaza to southern Israel, which killed no Israeli in the new offensive until Saturday, was characteristically disproportional and used to shore up an unpopular government, as was Bush's response to 9/11. Until so-called terrorism is treated as a crime committed by a few and not an act of war where innocent civilians are punished, violent response will only increase from desperate people who see themselves trapped with nothing left to turn to. The president-elect has been strangely quiet on this issue, saying we only have one president at a time, which is a massive cop-out. Nancy Pelosi, who is not unique in her allegiance to Israel, also said that Israel has a right to defend itself without extending that same right to the Palestinian people. Why do we call people defending their homes and sovereignty terrorists and accept, if only grudgingly, state-sponsored violence and oppression? I do abhor violence, but the violence I most detest is state-sanctioned or sponsored violence. The state or religious texts and institutions constantly exhort us that killing is wrong. Then the state imprisons people, shoots down young people in our streets in cold blood, commits executions, and kills innocent citizens of other countries with impunity. What the F? In my opinion, the impunity for state-sanctioned killing must come to an end if we will ever see peace in Israel, the Middle East, or anywhere. I want to close this mini soapbox rant with a quote from Mahatma Gandhi that we should all seriously and sincerely reflect on. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
Some anniversaries aren't cause for celebration. January 11, 2009 marks the seventh year of gross human rights violations perpetrated by the U.S. government and military against foreign detainees being held illegally on U.S. soil. The United States detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have become emblematic of the gross human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of fighting terrorism. At Guantanamo, the U.S. government sought to hold detainees in a place where neither U.S. nor international law applied. But no one can be held outside of the law. Detainees held at Guantanamo, Bagram, and elsewhere must either be charged with crimes and given fair trials or be released. Witness Against Torture announces a new chapter in the campaign to close the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, end torture and indefinite detention, and stop extraordinary rendition by the U.S. government. The 100 Days campaign brings together a coalition of groups and individuals who will take part in demonstrations, educate Congress and the public, and engage in nonviolent direct action. Join us in defending basic human rights. Hundreds of detainees are still being illegally held, many of whom have been cleared of all charges. Sign our online petition urging President-elect Barack Obama to take immediate action to close Guantanamo and end illegal U.S. detentions at www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com. Today we are standing up for their rights. Tomorrow it might be yours. For more information about the ongoing campaign to shut Guantanamo, visit 100dayscampaign.org and find out how you can make a difference.
Our Ask Cindy question of the day comes from Greg Fernandez, who lives in Castro Valley, which is pretty close to San Francisco. His question is, we here in the Bay Area are so excited that you did so well against Nancy Pelosi. As someone who has several cousins returning from Iraq, I share a lot of your concerns, not only for our state, but for our country. This is my question. Do you believe that the official 9/11 Commission report should be reevaluated? Well, Greg, I get this question in different forms probably more than any other, so I decided to answer this one on my first show. Although I have not been shown convincing proof that 9/11 is an inside job, and yes, I have seen loose change, I am convinced that the original 9/11 Commission report were deeply flawed, and it is certainly not very transparent or open. I mean, George Bush and Dick Cheney didn't even have to testify under oath, and they testified in secret. It was not transparent at all. There are many, many unanswered questions about the attacks on that day, and we are quagmired in two wars because of 9/11. I definitely support a valid investigation that is independent of our government and that has subpoena power and some real teeth. I have always supported the 9/11 truth movement because I really believe that the truth will set us free. Well, thank you so much for listening to my first show, everybody. I hope you learned something new, and I hope that you will listen next week as our show will concentrate on shutting down Guantanamo, since it will be the 7th anniversary of the opening of that U.S. torture facility in Cuba. We will have some great guests, and we are inviting Nancy Pelosi to be a guest since she was briefed on torture in 2001. Your assignment this week is to go to our website and sign the petition demanding that Obama follow through with his promise to close the torture facility in Guantanamo Bay for a start. I would like to thank my producers, Tiffany Burns and Dee Dee Miller, and our editor and technician, Scott Cuddy. I hope you tell your friends and fellow infomercial fans that there's a new show in town and help us spread the word. We here at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox wish you a merry and prosperous new year. This is Cindy Sheehan signing off, and we'll talk to you next week. Please be sweet to each other.